Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Well, hello everybody. I'm Ruth, the host of A Quiet Life, and it's really great to have you with me. And I am recording this at nearly 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it feels really strange because I normally record it a lot earlier. You know what? You just have to do things. So anyway, more on that in a minute. But today it's episode 36 of A Quiet Life, and as I record it, it is 26th of June 2019. And as I said, in the afternoon. And today's guest is Matt Colwell, and he talks with us about his life as a missionary. He actually trained for 7 years to be a Catholic priest and then didn't get ordained and went on to life in the public service and then left that and became a missionary with YWAM, with Youth with a Mission. And so we talk about that whole process and what it was about for him and stories of his life in YWAM and God's faithfulness. I think it's a fantastic interview. I may be slightly biased, but I really enjoyed talking to Matt. Yes, so this week in my life, why am I late recording today? Well, I launched a book this week. So I write under another name. My writer name is RJ Amos, and you can find my books at rjamos.com. And I launched a book that I wrote in the summer. So in the summer, I decided to challenge myself to write 30 short stories in 30 days. And I did it. And then I have taken all those short stories and I have put them together into one book, and you can find all the details for that at rjamos.com. But once you write a book and publish it, because I self-publish everything, then you have to start getting it out there. I mean, I want people to read it. That's why I do this, because I like people reading my work, and I like to share it, is what I'm saying. And so some lovely people said thank you, yes, they would really love a copy, and could I post it out to them? So this afternoon, instead of recording this when I got back from Alpha, I instead wrapped things up in bubble wrap and took them down to the post office and mailed them off. So there's some nice people with packages coming their way in the mail, and that's really cool. I enjoy doing that, signing all the books and whatever. So if you want, you know, a signed copy of Challenge Accepted, my short story book, feel free to drop me a line. I would love to give it to you. Or you can buy it on Amazon or, you know, Kobo or iBooks or whatever. So that's a really big thing that's happened this week. It's really nice to hit that finish line, actually have the boxes of books arrive and look at them. And there's ebooks as well, but, you know, to be able to hold something in your hand that you've created is a big joy for me. And it's part of what I do now, and so it's exciting. So there you go. Also this week, Caleb finished his exams, so thank you, praying people, for praying. His final exam was absolutely beautiful. He enjoyed it as much as you enjoy exams, I think. Well, it could have been slightly better, I have to say. There was one question he just didn't like as much as the others, but basically went well. So thank you very much, and it's great to have the exams over and done with. And another thing it's great to have over and done with is reports. So Moz is a teacher and it's report writing time, and he spent all weekend writing reports, but they're done now, they're finished, they're in, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. So that's great. And what we're doing now is a whole lot of socializing, having people over and going out for dinner and things like this. which we sort of put off while reports were happening, because he was just sitting down and writing reports. So that's very cool. As for next Wednesday's podcast, look, if it turns out to be next Thursday's podcast, I'm just giving you advance notice now. We, as I've said before, we're doing Alpha at St. Luke's, and that happens on a Wednesday morning at the moment, and that's great, but we're having the away day, which is can be a weekend away, but what we're doing is just having a longer Wednesday day next week. So I'm going to be away at Alpha for most of next Wednesday, and we'll see what happens in terms of putting the podcast up. But I know that you all want to hear the podcast next week because it's the interview with my dad. Finally, I pinned him down and made him talk to me for an hour or so. Yeah, so it's a long one. I think we'll be doing it over the next couple of weeks, but I'm looking forward to that as well. So, good times at the moment. Things happening, and that's exciting. And yes, busy trying to squeeze extra bits and pieces like posting books in, but still, it's such a joy to be able to do these things. Anyway, let's get on with the interview. I know that you're going to enjoy hearing really interesting things about Matt's life. It's not just a straightforward, hey, I got a call from the Lord and went into missions. It's a bit more complex than that, and it's a really great interview. So enjoy. Today's guest is Matt, and Matt is one of those friends who is more like family.
Yeah, we get back a while, don't we?
Yeah, right to, I think, to 1985.
How old were you then, Ruth?
11.
11?
Yeah, I was a baby.
Yes, YWAM Canberra days.
Yeah, and Matt and Maureen then moved to Tassie after we moved to Tassie to be part of YWAM.
At the invitation of your...
parents?
Your father, yeah.
And then when we staffed at DTS, Moz and I, Matt and Maureen were our leaders then. Yeah. And then later on, when my parents ran away to the United States, Matt and Maureen helped out as substitute grandparents and looked after the kids when they were sick or when we were sick. And so Matt and Maureen have three kids of their own, and I counted six grandchildren.
Correct, yes. Three, two, and one.
And that's per child. So three for the eldest child, two for the middle child, one for the... And they all live interstate, but I hear you're about to take off and go visit
them. Yes, we'll be able to visit the ones in Townsville.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Cool. So anyway, we could obviously reminisce for a long time,
but couldn't we
ask the question. So how did you become a Christian?
Oh, dear. I don't really know.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a big question. Like, I was born in it and bred, you know, for better or worse, in a nominally Catholic family. So in one sense, I've always been a Christian. But even as a child, I knew I had some issues, particularly with rejection on the one hand and with rebellion on the other hand. And I think I was very confused as a child, confused and oscillating between those two extremes. And in the midst of that confusion, you know, I had some sort of connection with God, but it was really, I knew God was the only answer to my identity issues. And that's what they were in retrospect. If I look back now, that's what it was.
Right.
And God was the only answer. So,
how do you think you got that picture, though?
Oh, that's a long story. That's taken 70 years. and maybe some of it we'll see. You see, I was searching for answers, searching for meaningful stuff that really that wasn't just a glib sort of answer, but a real answer. And sometimes, you know, I would see God or see a sort of an answer up the end of the street. And so I'd run to that. But when I got there, whatever it was, God or whatever, ultimately I saw it as God. You know, he'd run to the next corner.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd race off to the next corner. But he was gone by the time I got there. And it went like this. So I was searching. A lot of my childhood and earlier years as an adult, searching for real answers, genuine answers that were really meaningful. And that searching, I think, has taken me to a lot of places, physically, geographically, spiritually. And it's been a good life. in one sense, but it's been very frustrating and confusing in another. So have I answered that question, how to become a Christian? Not really, I suppose, but it was when we came to YWAM, really, that I became a born-again Christian.
Right. So if we go before that at the moment, there was... Now, I heard that you studied to join the priesthood.
Scary, eh? Yes, well, you see, that was part of my searching.
Mm.
I was looking for answers, and the only thing I knew in my sort of time, in my experience, was Catholic priesthood, was something closer to God. So when I was about 17, that's what I decided I felt that I needed to do. And so I spent 7 years studying for the Catholic priesthood. Philosophy, theology, languages, histories, scripture. And I got some answers.
Mm.
So I certainly appreciate that time. But I think the more answers I got, the more I sorted myself. Well, I started to sort myself out a little bit.
Mm.
But as I sorted myself out, I saw really that God was calling me in a different way, different path, more radical, more meaningful, more personal, less theoretical.
More radical than the Catholic priesthood, that's saying something. I think
well, there's so much culture in the Catholic system, or any denomination, I suppose. There's lots of culture and so many sort of theoretical answers. What I mean by radical is foundational, where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that priesthood, well, I left without being ordained. And I wasn't really sure then where I was going.
Mm.
But I started to become more assertive in myself. I started to pursue a career in the public service and met Maureen, got married, had children, bought a home, you know. Bought a car. All those sort of marks of success, and they worked. But even so, after 13 years in the public service, I again found this wasn't really answering my searching.
Mm-hmm. Were you still going to a Catholic church at that point? Or?
No.
Mm.
Partly that was tied up partly with Maureen, but also with the leading of God. Like Maureen was brought up as a Lutheran.
Right.
And so when we were first married, we went to a Lutheran church. And so for a while sometimes we went to a Lutheran, sometimes to a Catholic. Yes, when the kids were young, at a Catholic school, we went to the Catholic church. But by that time, I was clued on to God wasn't tied up in a particular denomination.
Yeah, absolutely.
God was much bigger than that.
Yeah, cool.
So really, by the time I was 40, I'd been successful in so many areas, the public service and so on, but it wasn't answering my deeper searching. And so when God called us on then to YWAM, I was ready.
Yeah.
I was really, really ready for whatever God had to offer.
Right, yep.
So that was the next big move. But the joining of in YWAM, well, it was part of that searching again. But even that question of whether we join YWAM or not, was it a solution that God put in front of us? That was already God answering. But I didn't realise it at the time. It's only in hindsight that you get this sort of understanding of things.
Absolutely. Look back and join all the dots.
Yes.
So how did YWAM first come across your radar?
Oh, well, we joined a charismatic group in the Catholic Church. But it was YWAM who taught us how to listen to the Holy Spirit and to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It was YWAMers. Right. That goes back to 1971. Mm. Yeah.
So I think Dad had a similar, and the interview with Dad is coming. Dad had a similar thing where he started teaching things that he'd learned from YWAMers, and eventually people said to him, well, why don't you just go do the training?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like a similar sort of thing.
In a sense. But it was 12, after we first met YWAM, 71, it was still 12 years before we joined YWAM.
Mm. Okay.
So there was a lot went under the bridge there.
Yeah.
But in moving to YWAM, that was again sort of mixed up with this whole searching for who I am, who's God, what's life all about, what's the meaning of stuff. And I didn't have a clue. I was really, as I look back now, it's a wonder I survived. I was a mess. I was an absolute mess. But, and those first 5 years in YWAM, well, they were hard. God gave some answers, but they weren't sort of good answers in a sense. I mean, God started out by showing me why I'd had a 40-year problem with my mother.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And this was gut-wrenching. This was really major. And then he led me to start forgiving her.
Hmm.
Now, that took years, actually. But that was God, you know. He showed me why I was in rage, quiet, like angry all the time, but it was not on the surface, it was underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed me why I was stubborn. He showed me why I was in rejection. He showed me why I was in rebellion.
Mm.
And through it all, he showed me more about who I am, my identity. And of course, he showed me heaps about himself as good father, in short.
Yeah.
So those 5 years, they were very difficult, where God gave me some fundamental answers to my searching.
It's a bit like surgery, though, isn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
And it took a long time to recover. You know, one simple word from God, and it laid me flat for months.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know.
So, I mean, it's really interesting that God chose to give you those answers you were looking for in a community situation where other people understood what you were going through and whatever, rather than earlier where you might have just...
Yeah. Well, sometimes, I don't know that they did understand. I felt very much stranded, you know. It's just me and God.
Mm.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was a very difficult time. But through it all, I think at the end, you know, the other big thing God did towards the end was he healed me of grief. Now, that was a big... I didn't know I had this grief in my life.
Mm. What were you grieving?
The death of me. Not the ultimate death of me, but a death of me as a little boy, you know, my identity.
Mm.
It was just what didn't exist.
Mm.
And that's what I was grieving over. I didn't know who I was.
Mm.
And all that sort of stuff. A bit complicated.
Oh, yeah.
But I was grieving over something in me that had never come to life, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, well, this is very deep. This is amazing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was. But the only merit I can claim is that I kept asking questions. I kept looking, which is not very much. But
and you feel like you got to the end of that 5 years and something had. It was a new start.
That was kind when of your thing? Father called us down or invited us to come down here.
Oh, I see.
To Hobart.
Get to Tasmania and your life really starts.
and so I guess I found the answers I needed. I was starting to be myself.
Hmm.
And so really we embarked upon whatever was left, 20 years of where God was able to use us in many different ways. Mm. As you know, probably a lot of administration and...
I wrote down a question about administration because I know that that was like really pivotal in blessing YWAM, not only nationally but internationally, I think.
Yeah, probably.
And a lot of people, when they think about going into missions, they don't think about, doing accounts or paperwork or whatever. But you found it's an important part of your ministry.
Well, that was the way God had gifted me, I suppose, through the going way back to the philosophy and stuff, and then the public service experience. So, which was a lot of policy, a lot of community development, a lot of writing and researching. And so when we went to India in 1992, that was specifically a research project that I was asked to do.
Mm.
Travel India and research a particular subject. So there would have been very few people in YWAM who could have done that.
Mm.
Anyway, that was a God's gift.
Mm.
When we went to Bangkok again, it was, I was largely helping with the development of YWAM's Mercy Ministries in South Asia and helping to administer two big projects in Cambodia. But I suppose over time I have come to see that a lot of people may see that type of missionary work as not really missionary. It's not real.
You're not standing on a soapbox and preaching.
You're not doing evangelism or pastoral care. You're not, directly.
Mm.
But I was working with people who were.
Mm.
While they were doing that sort of stuff, I was able to make sure all the T's were crossed and the I's were dotted in big projects. But I can say really that in answer to this sort of broader question, the most critical element of being a missionary is the motivation or the heart behind it.
Mm.
So while other people did the evangelism and pastoral care, I was able to do the admin stuff and even staff training out of obedience to God. Yeah, first there. Mm-hmm. And secondly, out of love for his people.
Mm.
You know, in many places, God's love and care has got to be real and tangible. And so when you take hundreds, literally hundreds of women and their children off the streets of Phnom Penh, you've got to have the admin, the backup, the policies to care for them, you've got to have the finances in order.
Mm.
And besides, a donor in Europe won't give you $500,000 for it if you don't have your finances in order.
That's true, yes.
Likewise in Stung Treng, here was a town of 20,000 people with a river running right next to it, but no running water in the town. They had no health care. And so to provide those sort of things, we needed proper organisation, admin, policies, governance, finances.
Yeah, it's really important.
And that's all I can say. It goes back to that's how God called me to serve, and that's how God called me to love his people.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned a lot of different nations and places. Is there some that has a special place in your heart?
Yeah, we served in a few other places as well. But I think India and Bangkok are special to us, or to me. Maureen doesn't like big cities. But they're special to me because in India, we saw how God cries for the spiritual poverty that people are in, how he cries over their karma that holds them in the bondage, over the physical poverty that they live in, physical and spiritual poverty. It's similar in Bangkok, I suppose, where the people live in fear of evil spirits, in short. And God, that just breaks God's heart, because it goes right against who he is as a loving and good father. And so God showed us something of his heart for those peoples. And so that's why those places are significant to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, special.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask... Oh, sorry, you go.
No, you go. It's all right.
Whether you had, some stories of God's amazing faithfulness during your time. I know you must have hundreds. But
yeah.
Something you'd like to share with us.
I think God's faithfulness... You can easily put God's faithfulness. You know, I needed $5 and God provided $5. You know. There are many of those sort of stories, I suppose. But more significant to me is like things like we've not received a salary in all those years in YWAM, but we've had a home, we've had great lifelong friends, we've had everything we needed. We've had, even on occasions, some surplus money just to go and buy an ice cream. You know. But I think and financially, you know, we went to India. We spent our last dollar on airfares. Then in India, we rented this flat. We lived in India, provided all our living expenses somehow, and then we had ministry expenses as well, which we were expected to cover, and I was asked to travel and all year. And so, but then we came back to Australia 12 months later, and what was in our bank account and how did it get there? There was $5,000, and I've got no idea how it got there. Or who it was from, even to this day.
Wow.
I just got to say, well, God was faithful. But more than that, God was faithful to our kids too. Like, not only did he keep them safe, but he matured them in ways that I could never have done. He grew them up. And it was... And so God's been faithful at many different levels. Faithful to himself and his character, you know. It's not because of me.
No.
You know. Really. I mean, I'm still searching for answers. So God's awesome.
He is.
You know.
He totally is. So you came back from, you've done all this travel. I wanted to say also, like, I like how you've said how he was faithful in India and then he was faithful when you came back to Australia, because I think people often see it very easily that God's faithful over in whatever third world or developing nation, and then you come back to a developed nation and you think, now you have to get a job and now you have to do whatever, but God's not restricted to only working in India.
God is faithful to his people wherever they live, yeah. And they've got to live somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. This is true.
I mean, you've got to live either, you know, in Melbourne or Sydney or Hobart or Chennai or Mumbai or Bangkok. You've got to live somewhere. And so God's still the same.
He's still the same.
He's still the same God, still faithful, wherever you're living, whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Whatever he's called you to.
Mm. So you've sort of moved on from YWAM mostly.
Yes.
And now you're working more with a local church. Was that a bit of a shift in thinking to be more involved with a local church instead of some missionary organisation?
It wasn't really planned. What was planned, I think, was more of a downtime.
Mm.
Like I was 65 and we'd been living out of suitcases and for 25 years and going someplace, setting up home, and then leaving it there as we moved on to the next place God called us.
Mm.
So to this, well, we don't own it anymore, but we've left furniture even in Chennai, in Bangkok, in Canberra, in Melbourne, I don't know where else, but we've left significant furniture all over the world. That's all good, though. But it was, when I was 65, it was sort of like, it's time to slow down.
Mm.
And God was even wanting that and allowing us to the, so we come back home and but I have continued to have significant roles in YWAM, but more at my choosing.
Mm-hmm.
But those roles have slowly over the last 10 years dropped off. I still have one or two.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, yes, I've become more involved where I'm living, in St. Clements.
Mm.
And that's a great thrill, really. I think, but it's just the same as being a missionary. Like I said before, you've got to live somewhere.
Yeah.
And so St. Clements has become like a platform to be a missionary to the people of Kingston, Kingborough.
Mm.
It's not, so in some respects it's not a big change.
Yeah. It's when you look at it from God's perspective, you're still doing God's work in God's place. So
yeah, and you know, God didn't call us to serve YWAM. He called it, you know, he called us to serve his people.
Yeah.
And some of them happen to be in India, some in Thailand or Cambodia, some in Vietnam, some in Mongolia even, some in Bangladesh, and some in Kingston.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. Love that. So when do you feel close to God?
Well, when I'm desperate.
Mm.
Definitely. The more desperate I am, the closer I feel. Which is it?
Great.
I like to feel close to God, but not I don't.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily easy. In fact, it's hard. But it's when God says, you know, write down your vision and wait.
Mm.
Wait on me. Just, you know. And so you go, just wait. And you're going through, you know, all sorts of trauma inside. and God says, just wait, I'll be faithful one day.
Yeah.
And that's when I feel closest to God.
Mm.
It's not easy. In fact, it's very hard. But that's when I feel closest to God.
Mm.
And, yeah, there are still lots of questions I've got. I've got a whole suitcase of questions for God.
Mm. But at the same time, you don't have that feeling of lack of identity or searching or that you had at
thankfully,
the beginning.
Thankfully, those fundamental questions were answered, yes. Mm-hmm. In those first years in YWAM, I got a real handle on them. But it is like an onion, definitely.
Yeah.
And so over the last 5 years, as I've been able to relax more with physically and with God, I think I've received even more understanding of who I am, and God's peeled away different layers of.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe I've come to a real core now. But as soon as I say that, God will open up another little window and I'll see, oh, right. Okay, God.
Well, we never actually get there, do we?
Not until the end. I don't think so. It's been a whole life of self-discovery of who I am and who God is.
Yeah, that's
not, not easy, but it's been good. Well, I say that in hindsight, after I've come through it all.
Yeah, yeah, like surgery again. Yeah. You don't want to do it, but you have to do it to come through it.
That's right.
So what's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
Oh, one of my favourite scriptures recently is from Romans. Somewhere in Romans, I don't know. Everyone or anyone who calls on the Lord will be saved.
Yeah.
He who, and it's similar, there are other similar passages. He who seeks will find.
Mm.
He who knocks will have the door open to him. Mm. And there's no question about that. There's no conditions attached to it. In fact, that's it. God's love is totally unconditional.
Mm.
And I don't have to even be righteous or a good person or anything. All I have to do is call on the Lord or seek or knock on, cry out for help.
Yeah.
In fact, Jesus said, you know, didn't he say, who needs a doctor? It's only the sick person who needs a doctor. It's only the sinner then who needs a saviour.
Yeah.
So.
And I guess that's your life, really, isn't it? Just a life of calling out on the Lord.
Calling out.
And hearing him answer.
Yeah, that's right.
That's fantastic.
So if there's some encouragement there for anyone, that's great. But that's not how I meant it initially, I think. It's just how I've managed to survive. And I recognise I haven't gone into that, the detail of what I was surviving.
Yeah.
There is a psychological name for it. And I don't want to mention it. But
I think so many of us come through life and things go wrong and you do feel like you're just surviving and so there's so many different reasons for that. There's many things that happen,
that's right.
I guess your advice would be just keep asking those questions.
Yeah. My big issue was an identity crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. All I could do was keep searching, keep pushing.
Mm.
But I knew that, you know, the Catholic system wasn't going to answer me. I knew the public service wasn't going to answer me. You know, I knew, well, not even YWAM as an organisation would answer me. It was only God.
Yeah.
So that's what I give thanks for. I, in a sense, I found those answers that I needed, or God provided the answers eventually. He could have been faster, though.
That's another one of your questions.
Yeah, that's right, God.
No, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us, Matt.
Leave it there, eh?
Yeah, I think so.
Thanks, thank you, Matt. Ruth. It's been fun.
It's been good.
Yeah.
I hope you were encouraged by that. I think it's wonderful encouragement to just keep asking those questions, keep searching, and God will show his face to us as we search. He has promised. Jesus has promised. So that's wonderful. Next week, as I said, talk to my dad. My dad is John Langlois, and we talk about his call to ministry in his life and all that that entailed. I want to thank Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music for this podcast, and thank you, Matt, for doing the transcription. And just a reminder to share this with somebody who you think it might help, because that's the best way to get the word out. And I will see you next week.